Street View Podcast is part of the Dallas Public Library's Homeless Engagement Initiative, dedicated to increasing community awareness of issues related to homelessness. The opinions expressed are solely those of the individuals and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Dallas Public Library or the City of Dallas.
How do you want to see it? What do you want to do? You got it all figured out, straight from your cube. Life's a musical, maybe a carousel. How do you want to see it? What do you want to do? Perception starts with selection. The same streets you walk on, they carry their own view. This is Street View.
Father God in heaven, we come right now knowing that you are who you are. You are supreme. You are magnificent. You are beautiful. You are the reason that we have order. Lord, we come asking to beseech your goodness. Asking that your word and your will would go forth from us. Utilize us to your potential. Not to our own, but to yours. Thank you for everything you've done. Everything. It's in Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen. What's happening, y'all? Rashad Anthony Dickerson in the building, doing the podcast. And I'm doing the podcast with some of the greats. I've got Wayne Walker here on the show. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
I've got Antoinette. Thank you for coming, Miss Briggs.
It's always a pleasure.
I also have Ryan,
the audio video captain
of all time here at the podcast. Thank you, Mr. Ryan, for showing. We also have Jasmine making an appearance in a few moments. So I wanted to start this episode by just kind of catching up and having conversation. You know, we always talk about different things as far as related to the issues of homelessness. And once Miss Antoinette explained to me what compassion fatigue was. And so I really, really, think I have a case of that right now. I've been hiding away from the world, stuck in my room, playing my video games, not coming out, to be honest. But the world always needs somebody that cares enough, because we're all human and we still want to promote humility. And so as we were all talking a while ago, we were talking about just different issues like what's going on in Tent City, you know, when did we start this journey? And I want to kind of get back to Ryan in a minute. But right now, I want to ask you something, Mr. Wayne. Do you know what compassion fatigue is?
It requires a lot of coffee. a lot of folks define it differently. I'll give you an example. So when Katrina hit, I was here in Dallas and I was taking classes at Dallas Seminary. The day after, I walked into the registrar's office and canceled all my classes and grabbed a team of people. And within a couple of days, I was there in Slidell. And, you know, you get so overwhelmed by need. You get so overwhelmed by all the people that are hurting.
Yes.
And then it gets to be a problem that seems insurmountable. There's no way you can fix this. They're dealing with this in Rowlett right now. I mean, you've got, we talk about homelessness here on your podcast, but there are so many people now that are homeless in Dallas that are new homeless that, you know, the day before the Christmas day woke up to unwrapping presents, and December 26th, their homes are destroyed by F4 tornado.
I know, I heard.
And so there's a lot of people that are homeless that are not under a bridge or in a shelter tonight that are experiencing it for different ways. And the people that are serving there will easily get fatigued. Yeah. There's only so much you can do. You know, you kind of the seashore covered by 1,000 starfish, and you can only throw a few of them in a day. And how many can you actually save? And is what we're doing making any difference? And you know, it can get to you psychologically.
Yeah, I've been there, man. What about you, Ryan? Compassion fatigue?
Well, I think I would tie it in with almost any other type of thing that you have to do that, you know, you rely on emotion to do. Because certainly there's the spiritual component, but just in terms of our physical lives, there's the mental and then there's the emotional component. And if you do anything based on, obviously, we have initial compassion for our fellow man.
Right.
Anytime we see. And for a little while, that emotion can sustain us. But, you know, whether you're angry or compassionate or whatever that emotion is that's driving you to do something, if you don't make the mental decision upstairs that up in your mind that you're going to keep doing what you're going to do. And when the emotions run out, you know, eventually you'll find yourself tired and not, you know, you've given so much of yourself that you're not. So I guess that's, I don't know if that halfway made sense.
It did. I've been dealing with a couple of friends, man, and some family, and I just been being hurt, you know. And so I have to focus on what it is I can do to get out of my funk and try to go forward. So I'm asking this question to you, Antoinette. What is compassion fatigue?
Well, compassion fatigue is an experience that people who are in social services have to figure out a way to deal with. It's just a sense of becoming overwhelmed with the needs of the community that you're serving. And that's definitely something that I deal with on a regular basis. The biggest thing for me is knowing when to leave it at work. Because, you know, when you're a compassionate person like I am, every person's story reverberates with me. So right. I take everything home and I'm feeling, you know, I empathize right. with everyone's situation. But it's one of those situations where you have to accept it for what it is, understand, help where you can, and then leave it at the job, leave it at the door.
You can't do it all. Recently, I had a situation happen. A friend of mine called me, was like, he's in a wheelchair. And he had a friend who was with him. We had conversation, exchange of words. I hadn't seen him in a while. And I gave him my number. I was trying to purchase a lighter from him, a real nice lighter. And he calls me maybe 2 or 3 days later. And he's like, listen, man, the guy who sold you the lighter that I was with, he got mugged and he's dead. And I'm stuck in this hotel room. Now, this is a paraplegic man. And I'm like, well, where are you? He's like, I'm in Addison. And I'm in like, well, I'm in South Dallas, bro. And so I'm like, I don't have a car. So I don't know how to get to you. So I look through my phone. I scroll through my phone and I come up on the number for iCaller. Now I call this number and I'm given a couple of different options and I call the administrative office. Nobody's answering. So I leave a message and this message is like, I know this message almost was like an hour long, maybe. And I'm trying to like, I feel like I'm shouting it to the universe and I can't really know that the result of my effort is actually being heard. Not until today when I see Wayne and Wayne's like, hey, man, I got your message, man. And we sent somebody out there. So, I mean, how often does that happen to you, Mr. Wayne?
Well, now with our app, we have people reporting homeless folks all over. I would say the county, but actually we have people reporting them much further than that now. But, you know, secondary traumatic stress is another name for compassion fatigue. And we almost get as a helper a bit of codependency when we feel like we're the only one that can help that person. You're the only guy that can help your friend in Addison, and you're going to punt the football to somebody else who you think is the only one that can help them. And you feel such a sense of responsibility because if they're not helped, it's on your shoulder because you know this and you have a stewardship with this information. You know, when our teams go out and they see folks that are hurting, it's impossible to not take it home. I get asked this all the time. You know, how do you not take it home? But there's also a reality that, you know, we are in a community of people. And if you are a believer, and I am, and I believe that God is sovereign and God is good, amen. Then if I can't, then I have to trust God that he is going to lead someone else to that spot, to that person in that moment. You know, I got your voicemail. It came in on an email to me. A lot of stuff we do is all IP and technology related. So and right. I immediately shot it over to a staff member that happened to be in Addison at the time. And I don't know the follow-up with that situation, but you know, you start to feel guilty. You just said it yourself. That was Monday. Yeah. Today is Wednesday. So for a couple of days now, you've been stressed out. What's happening with my friend?
Right.
And, you know, that happens a lot when someone sees a homeless guy on the street, under a bridge, or they see a guy by a box, or they see somebody panhandling. Mm-hmm. If someone who's not homeless and not used to that scenario, they have that moment of, if I don't stop and help this person, then their well-being is on my shoulders.
Right, Right.
Right. And they feel this overwhelming sense of stress and relief and anxiety. And they're stuck in traffic. They can't get out of their car, you know. And an hour later, they're driving home and they're like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that guy who was under that bridge. And if I don't do anything, then, you know, their world's going to cave in. And
yeah.
And that person now has my name on their destiny. And it can really stress us out in that moment.
So let's go ahead and get into some deep stuff. Well, not even deep stuff, but just a little bit about the city. Wayne, you were telling me earlier you were in a meeting. What are you guys talking about?
Well, I'm in lots of meetings. I feel like that's what I do most. Today I was in a meeting. It's a weekly meeting at City Square's location with MDHA and some other stakeholders and the continuum of care folks about an engagement team that goes down with the Tent City. Mm-hmm. There's a team that they've created. It's mostly folks from City Square, MDHA, The Bridge, MetroCare, and I think some folks from the City of Dallas Housing Authority and maybe some crisis intervention folks to go down and do engagement in Tent City. And just a recap for folks that don't understand or aren't familiar with that term, you know, cities often will where the homeless congregate the most in camp and create this little environment. And you can see it with either boxes or some kind of homeless paraphernalia, blankets right. or tents. We term Tent City and, you know, I've been doing this in Dallas for years. And so we've had multiple tent cities. The one in Dallas now is probably the largest it's been in probably 10 years.
Yeah.
It's under I-45 and it stretches almost 7 blocks now. And there's about 140 tents there. I'm estimating there's, 250 folks that sleep there at night. And there's some things that have been done that have made the population grow.
Okay.
Like? Well, a couple of things. One is they've really tried to do a great engagement where they talk about how do we rapidly rehouse somebody? Okay. Mm-hmm. We're going to go down and we're going to engage a few folks. And if we can really maybe circumvent the existing processes that exist and we can sign somebody up for a rapid rehousing program and go through the steps with them, then we can get them out of this situation. Well, that's great. But right. when they publicize
yeah.
and tell the world we're kind of circumventing this process and we're going to rapid rehouse a bunch of folks here, that makes a lot of people get out of line and come jump in yours. It's like when you're in the grocery store mm-hmm. and there's 13 people in your line and someone opens up a register next to you. What do? You jump out and run in that one because you think you can get out faster. And so because they publicized this rapid rehousing, there's many folks that have migrated to this to this location. And also it seems to be there's a strategic initiative to kind of shut down some of the other outlying encampments.
Kind of force everybody in one place.
And to push everybody in one place. And of course, they had sanitation issues and they have constant security issues and trash issues. Now the city has put down dumpsters. Mm-hmm. They've put down, porta potties and stuff like that. The police, I don't think, have really picked up any more. They're not doing a lot more patrols there. Right. So there's a whole lot of violence that happens there. And so now you have folks that say, I don't want to live in Tent City because it's so violent, because you have like the meth area, you know, all the ice is being used and you have the crack area and then you have a lot of prostitution going on there and a lot of other stuff going on there.
Right.
And then you have groups that show up and have the right heart and maybe not the right
methods.
Yeah, that's a good word. It's kind of like if you ever read the book When Helping Hurts, you know.
I've never read it.
So they'll show up and they'll drop off armloads of valuable goods thinking, well, we're going to help folks here. And those goods are used as commodities where people are fighting over them and they're committing acts of violence and sex trafficking and human trafficking in order to get these items and trade these items. And there's a lot of territorialism that's happened in there. And so we meet people every day that are getting stabbed there and cut there and assaulted there and, you know, regular violent assaults, including sexual assaults there. And so people are moving out of there and they're camping in further locations. But yeah, Tent City in Dallas is pretty big.
Where is it located? What's some of the main streets?
So it's right underneath 45, just south of I-30.
Mm-hmm.
It actually stretches, I think, about 6 blocks. So if you take Hickory, Hickory is one of the main streets that goes under there. Dawson's another one. Mm-hmm. And so you'll see about 140 tents there now.
Is Hands and Hearts still operating over there?
So there are dozens of organizations that provide services there. Hands and Hearts is a ministry that provides a church service and a meal there on Saturdays. They have this big 35-foot-long gooseneck trailer, and they show up there and serve folks. They used to serve under the bridge, but they had some problems, and so now they leased a piece of property right next to it. They serve there on Saturdays. And then you have Sister Karen's group that goes out there. I think they're up there every day, but right. I think one day a week, maybe Friday, they do a big service out there. I think the Soupmobile goes out there once or twice a week. Our teams go out there pretty regularly. We don't serve food out there because our facility is not too far a walk from there, and we serve hot meals every day and showers and laundry and all the other stuff. But then you have these random groups that just show up on Saturdays. And
stuff out.
You know, my favorite quote was from a friend of mine down there. I pulled up one day and said, "How you doing?" And he said, "Today I'm burrito drunk." He said like 8 different groups had shown up, and all of them had burritos, and he literally had burritos stuffed on every pocket of his coat and just had 3 or 4 in his hand. He's like, "You want some burritos?" You know, there's just so much generosity, but sometimes too much generosity can be a bad thing.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to talk about Tent City is because it has gotten so much media attention, and I think that that's probably some of these random Saturday goers. They've seen it in the paper or on the news, and they want to, you know, go do something and help people out. But what's interesting is that, you know, right now, as of the recording of this episode, city's sort of taken an alternate direction than they initially were, because there were so many complaints about Tent City and sort of the spirit of a lot of the articles that were published was very like, city needs to do something about this. This can't be tolerated. This is a public health concern. This is a public safety concern, which it seems to still be accepted that it is. But there was just an article published recently about how the city's taking a different approach and through compassion and trying to connect those people with services, and accepting that the city of Dallas, its major crisis is affordable housing. We have a huge shortage of affordable housing in this city for people who are even trying to be, you know, middle class and are professionals, let alone, you know, people with different skill sets and different backgrounds and different life experiences. Is we have a huge shortage of affordable housing in this city. And that the process, you know, is a long-term process to get someone, out of homelessness. And that, you know, when it comes to Tent Cities, it gets a lot of media attention because of how visible it is. And I know Wayne's one of the few people who aren't the biggest supporters of Housing First, because, you know, there's so much more root issues with someone than just a roof over their head. And it's a lot more complicated than that. And I know a lot of those people experiencing homelessness would almost prefer to live in a tent than in a shelter. And we have a shortage of even shelter space.
Right.
And those things happen in shelters. You just have security guards who are there to say, you know, you're out. You just stab somebody, or, you know, there is danger. And people will say, you know, oh, people come to the library just because it's a warm place, which it's very cold outside right now. And I do believe there are some people who are coming in for the first time because it is warm. But I do think it's also because they don't necessarily – they want to be in a safe environment where they know that they're not going to be in a, you know, in a space with hundreds of other people who are experiencing homelessness, who have sort of a vast array of issues or, you know, well, life experiences. And they're going to be a little more safe here.
Yeah. Well, to kind of touch on all of that, the last time you were on the podcast, we talked about Housing First. And how if a guy is drowning, you don't throw him a sandwich. You remember that? Mm-hmm. And at this moment, you know, I got my housing. And, bro, I can't take care of myself. Like, I can't cook. Like, and I mean, I literally had to go to the laundromat with, like, 5 bags of laundry the other day, bro. Like, I was proud of myself for folding up all those clothes.
You know, we'll do your laundry for free at our college. Once a week, you can bring a 10-pound bag. A lot of folks who get housing still come back to us because they can eat a hot meal. They can go to an AA meeting or a 12-step meeting or a Bible study. You can still get clothes. We'll help you do your laundry. I was just talking to one of the guys at the bridge this morning about a class that we used to teach. We're probably going to start teaching again. They really prepare people for, so you're about to get housing. Let's talk about what that means.
Yeah.
What it means to work with your landlord, what it means to be a good neighbor, what it means to be responsible in that kind of environment, what it means to how to use the thermostat and the oven and
right.
how to work the system to find the best food pantries to where you live.
Right.
Not to hustle the system, but to figure out which ones work in your zip code and
resources.
What days to get. Yeah. Just here's a list of resources available to you. Yeah. It's difficult. And we hear people get housing all the time and they just don't understand, the norm that's expected there. So I heard this morning in a meeting about a woman that, she got housing. She's been there for a few months and she's lost it now. She didn't know that she couldn't just pick up a newspaper outside on her neighbor's doorstep, that that was actually the neighbor's newspaper and not hers.
Wow.
She didn't know she couldn't go pick some flowers out of the community garden and, you know, rip them out and then put them in her apartment because she wanted flowers. You know, just basic. And yeah. I've visited so many people that have the air conditioner on in the winter and the heater in the summer because they just don't understand how to work the controls.
Right.
You know, there's a whole level of basic life skills for folks that get housing that haven't been into it so long.
Right.
And it's kind of foolish and ignorant to expect someone to learn how to operate a machine like a house, you know, the day they move in. And that's one of my biggest problems with some of the Housing First initiatives. I think it's a great plan if it's followed through.
Mm-hmm.
But I think some of the organizations are just focused on housing only. So we're
right.
going to get you. We're going to drop you off. We've touched down, scored. You're not homeless anymore. We'll go to the next guy. Well, wait a minute. This individual still has needs.
Yeah.
They still need help. They still need community. And they may need now more help in a different fashion.
Well, I tell Rashad, because he's talked about how he's gone out of homelessness and into poverty, that, you know, getting into housing and getting a car and getting those things is actually a lot more responsibility. And when you sort of grown up in a culture of poverty or you've also just been without for a very long time, you can easily get yourself into much more trouble
yeah.
by having those things and not properly preparing yourself and paying parking tickets
or not parking illegally
and having those, you know, pile up and into warrants and whatnot. Okay. I won't pick on Rashad anymore, but I
yeah.
will say I wonder, Wayne, if other than it being tied, other than life skills training being tied to housing, like you're on your way to housing here, these are some skills you need. We've heard from some of our customers, and Antoinette can lend to this a little bit more, but that, you know, through coffee conversation, that they do have an interest in budgeting classes and or some life skills or things like that. And in our experience, you put a flyer up, you tell people we're going to offer a financial literacy class or a life skills class, and like no one's going to show up to that.
Right.
So it's like you hear one thing and you know that there's a need for that. And it's just sort of how do you creatively, when it's not tied to something wonderful and amazing like housing, you know, how do you help equip people with those skills and have them actually show up?
I also think that's a contributing factor to compassion fatigue. But y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. So we're sitting here and we're trying to figure out a couple things. Like when you have the necessary resources that you think would suffice for a situation, you know, we always run into the issue of incentives to get individuals to come or even, and sometimes you don't have money for incentives. Sometimes you have to be creative in the ways that you, you offer incentives for resources that are readily available to help individuals. So our question to you, Wayne, you've been in the game, what, how long now? About 15 years. And our question to you is, how do you get people to come to those things?
Well, just like I would be very critical of an organization that says once someone's housed, their life is cured. The guy that gets housed, he often feels the same way. So now that I got keys in my hand, I got my own crib, I got my own place, that my life is fine. I don't need anybody anymore. And so we see folks that do the same thing. They get their own place and they, I don't need anybody. I'm fine. I'm a man. I've got all this figured out. But really, housing is a step. It's not a solution. It's a step in a holistic process. Because if someone thinks of housing as a solution, they're just going to, it's not going to be long before they're back on the street again. Because you need a community around you. You got to learn how to pay the bills and how to manage your income and how to grocery shop and all that stuff. And so your question about how to incentivize people to come, I think is, and you think about what someone needs in that environment. You just said, I need food. All I'm eating is honey buns, right?
Yeah.
Those aren't so good for you, right?
No.
And if you could incentivize, hey, we'll give you chunks of free food if you'll come to these classes, and you're going to say, man, I don't want the classes, I just want the food. But if you could incentivize someone's real need, because really there's two needs we always focus on with anybody, real needs and felt needs, right? Your felt need is you're hungry. Mm-hmm. Your real need is you need to learn how to manage the food aspect of your life better.
Yeah.
And so if they can incentivize, we're going to give you groceries if you go to this class. It's kind of like what the Stew Pot does with your ID. You want an ID, you wait in line. Well, you also got to go to a class for them to pay for it for you for free. And it's kind of an incentive program. If you want the ID, you have to go to the class. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
It gives you an opportunity to maybe learn something that you don't think you need to learn how, or you would never admit that you needed to learn.
True.
But if we throw that incentive out for you and offer it to you. So at our calling, you know, for example, we don't require any IDs from anybody. Anybody can turn down our service. Everybody's accepted. Anybody can come in. We don't care who you are, what you look like. But we want to incentivize everything we do. So like our discipleship team guys, they serve because they want to. But out of that, we want to show grace and generosity to them. So, you know, they get access to special events. We give them bus passes. You know, they earn a locker. They earn a lot of different things because we want to incentivize what they're doing. Not as a reward system, but as an opportunity for them to recognize, hey, I'm giving and I'm also getting back.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Antoinette, you guys recently set up an incentive situation here with the help team, right?
Well, yes. Quite a few of our customers who come to the library are willing to jump in and help us with different events, be that setting up, helping us take it down, helping us relocate items. And we realized that we already had resources that they were utilizing and that we could use that as a way to incentivize. So we created computer coupons. So every time a person who wants to volunteer with us but doesn't necessarily qualify for our volunteer program comes and helps us with something, we can exchange a computer coupon and then get an additional session here at the library.
Computer session, which roughly lasts about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of our homeless customers here at the library come here to utilize the computer.
They do. And I think one of the best, you know, we're all about trying to make decisions based on what we're hearing from our customers. And Antoinette and I were setting up for our homeless engagement survey. Was this a mm-hmm. yeah, survey? And we had Pooh. He was sitting around while us two ladies were putting all these tables and chairs together. And he offered to help. And of course, in the process of helping us, he missed his computer reservation, and he left his computer reservation, so he didn't get the full time, and so I was like, oh, we'll just, you know, go tell them at the desk that Jasmine said give you a computer session, and you know, his whole just face lit up, and it was just the, you know, like an early Christmas present to him, and I think it was in that moment that we realized we had what we needed. People were already coming to the library for that, and it had a lot of value to them.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we can use those computer coupons as other incentives to other programs that again, we're hearing people want. So we're not just assuming their needs. They are telling us they want certain programs, like computer classes, but then we offer them and no one shows up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think brainstorming ways for us at the library, because, you know, we do what we can. We have people coming in here, whether it's for the internet, whether it's to read, whether it's for the space, whether it's for connecting with people. And unfortunately, we don't have the luxury, not that it's a luxury, but, you know, we are not an organization that's sole purpose is to help the homeless. And
right.
And so we also sort of walk a fine line of what do we offer versus what do we really need to refer people out to,
mm-hmm.
Versus what do we need to bring someone in to the library to offer.
Right.
And so we'll actually be starting some legal services the next month here
right.
for some
well,
one-on-one.
Flip, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
We have an attorney, a local attorney who wants to provide. Yes. He wants to actually represent some of our homeless customers.
Kudos to the library, because the library has stepped up in a major way, like for the homeless, also for just citizens in Dallas. And I've been talking to some of the homeless culture, and they've been saying that the culture of the city has changed towards them a lot. Like we were talking about Tent City earlier, and on the last podcast, we talked about how sometimes we'll sweep something up under the rug and think it's all good. And it almost seems like the effort that they're making here at Tent City
is a sweeping up under the rug type of situation. What I do like about that situation, as Wayne said, is they're not just doing one thing with that. They're not just sweeping it up under the rug. They're actually going back and to pick out what's valuable and what's not. Not really.
Well, they're not being hasty about it either. It's not like just clean this up because people don't want to look at it anymore. And by clean it up means literally kicking people out of their homes and throwing away their belongings, which from the outside world be perceived as trash. And the hasty way is not the best way. It's taking our time, putting some addressing those immediate concerns, which was public health and public safety, with the dumpsters and the toilets, and then working together, it sounds like, with some of the key players who can really do something to help those people in a more long-term strategic way instead of just cleaning it up and sweeping it under the rug.
I got a question for you, Wayne. As of recent, it just came to me, just thinking, man, what do you tell the people who lost their homes in these tornadoes? What's their first step and which way do they go?
Well, that's a whole different conversation than a homeless guy that's been on the streets for years. Most of the folks that lost their homes probably have insurance.
Yeah.
They were maintaining the home, so they probably have a source of income. They lost possessions.
Yeah.
They lost security, and some of them lost family members. You know, I think 11 people died in this. The whole neighborhoods were wiped out.
Right.
And so they lost the community aspect. I mean, you've got folks that are living in motels and hotels and rentals now that insurance companies are following up. And so they've been displaced. They've lost their community, their local Starbucks they used to go to, and, you know, their little commute home and their local church. Now they're displaced in a new location. And so the way you would serve or minister to someone in that community would be completely different than a homeless situation. But it's interesting the way to see that a city will rally behind this natural disaster so much quicker than they will behind the homeless community, which is still a disaster, although most people would look at that and say it's a man-made disaster. So a tornado comes through, that's a natural disaster. This guy had no control over the situation. But often, you know, the community will look at a homeless guy and say, well, he is he's living out his choices, right? Mm-hmm. He's homeless because of choices he's made. And this is a consequence of, you know, him just being a fool or whatever.
Right.
And so they're less likely to bring forward help to a guy who's been just as devastated. I mean, we still have people in Dallas that are homeless from Katrina and Ike and, you know, tornadoes even further back before they're in hurricanes.
Yeah.
And so they became homeless. They'll stay homeless. I mean, I remember when all the evacuees and stuff were brought here from Louisiana during Katrina, and we still got a number of those still on the streets.
That's true. That's absolutely true. And to think about how many people lost. I lost, you know, when you talk about losing a community, man, I mean, every Sunday after church, we'd go to my uncle's house and we'd play basketball as a family. And, you know, I lost that, and that really, really hurt, man. And so for the individuals who are going through the whole situation with the tornado, I want to let you know my condolences and my heart goes out to you. Jason is going out there. Jason was going to be on the podcast with us today. But he had to volunteer out there today to help some of those individuals. It just was on my mind and on my spirit. I have a question for you, Antoinette. How many individuals within a week's time do you say that you serve from Tent City?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I don't make it a point to necessarily ask them if they're staying in a shelter or if they're in Tent City. But of the ones who have definitely made it a point to let me know, I'd say anywhere from 10 to 20 per week.
Per week?
For sure.
So you're getting like a significant number of individuals who come from Tent City.
Well, I thought it was a significant number until I heard there were over 140 tents.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we do have a little bit of an impact and word is getting out there about the services that the library offers, but there's definitely more of a need for service in that area.
Well, let me just real quick, if I can, address the weather right now. You know, our teams, we go out all over the city. And right now, I think we're losing about one person a week. One homeless individual a week is dying on the streets. We were hosting a memorial service for a homeless woman at our facility a couple weeks ago. And as family members and other people that knew her started to show up, a homeless guy was brought over from the bridge right across from us, just profusely bleeding all over his head. He was assaulted violently. And then a week later, somebody else was assaulted violently. This type of weather, the depression that comes around this type of the year, time of the year, a lot of people get depressed around Thanksgiving and Christmas because they look around and I'm not with my family. I'm not with my friends. I don't have what I used to have. And just the weather often brings people down. And then when you have all this outpouring of generosity on the street, people passing out stuff that obviously supports some bad habits as well, it kind of gives a pretty ugly recipe. A
lot of friction.
So with the weather right now, and we're just now starting the coldest time of the year, and we think it's going to get colder before it gets warmer. You know, it's important that as people come into the library, I would hope, and I know you guys are doing this, try to look for some of those signs of people that could be in bad health, different than you would in the rest of the year, just because of the weather.
Okay.
Especially people that have severe mental health issues. They may not recognize that they have extremity issues because they just don't know how to communicate that very well.
Right.
I know we gave a truckload of blankets away to another organization yesterday that needed them. You know, this is the time of year when our teams are going out and they're finding horrible things, you know, things you don't want to talk about on a podcast. But people are in desperate, tragic, fatal situations this time of year, and love you guys providing this not only a community environment here in the library, but also just a warm place to get out of the elements is very important. There's not a lot of day shelter space in Dallas. Our facility is not a day shelter, but there are some that are. And it's great to know that you guys provide another space that's open for folks to come in and get out of the cold.
Yeah, it's been really great. I've heard some stories about the library also letting church services. There's a guy, I don't know if you know Pastor Tucker, usually preaches,
right
across the street. Sometimes they'll let him come into the library in order to do his preaching. And in the library, like I said, man, big ups to the library, bro. Because to be honest, and the truth and the reality of things is, you know, a long time ago when we started the podcast, I said, you know, I don't have the same problems that some other people would have with bills and worries, but I do have the weather to worry about. And man, you know, even Tommy at the bridge said something that stuck with me for a long time. He said, you know, that hawk will get your mind right. It'll make you come up in here and act right, follow the rules and do what you're supposed to do. So, yeah.
Everybody wants to be compliant when it's cold.
Yeah.
And it's like all the rehabs are all full because everybody wants to get sober when it's cold.
When we come back, I'd like for you to tell me a little bit more about the app. So, we're back. And we are going to talk about the app, the Our Calling app, and what it can do, what's its functions, and how it can help anybody.
So I get calls every day. I just got a call from another organization as I was pulling into y'all's parking garage. And I was dropping the call. People call and say, hey, where can I send this guy right now? And today was a guy and a girl together. She's pregnant. You know, where can they go right now they needed a shower or they needed food. We get these calls all the time. And so we started years ago collecting these list of resources of where people could go, what shelters are available, where's the closest pregnancy resource center, or where's the closest clinic for X, Y, and Z. And so, you know, as you know, we've talked about this before, we put together this website full of this resources, almost 300 organizations listed on there now. You can sort it by, you know, anything, if you need just domestic violence or just food pantries or whatever. And then we created the printed directory. You know, police officers carry that now. DART uses it. You guys use them here in the library. A lot of organizations use it. I think we've gone through about 40,000 copies of that in the last year of the directory. And so then the next natural addition of that would have been an app. And so when we originally created the app, we created it on the iPhone platform because it was designed for, you know, if I want to help a homeless guy and I have my iPhone with me, I need a list of all these services. And not only do I need a list, but I need it to know where I'm standing and what's the closest resource to where I'm at right now.
Mm-hmm.
And if I need to know where I can send someone to eat, where's the directions to get there and walking directions. And right before Christmas, we launched the Android version, which just came out, which is fun because we see about 60% of our homeless friends have some kind of phone. And so having that available where they can install the app and see in their hand, where can I eat today? Where's the closest domestic violence center? Where's the closest food pantry? Where's the closest rehab? And then the app has the capacity for people that are not homeless to report locations that our search and rescue team should go to. So often someone will say, hey, there's a mom and some kids living in a tent behind this building. Well, now with the app, they can report that and it'll send the GPS coordinates back to us. They can send a photo. They can send details. You know, I get police officers that call me and say, hey, we've got a woman here as a domestic violence situation. Where can we send her? And they think of the three domestic violence centers in Dallas, and most of them are full on a regular basis. Well, our app has details outside of Dallas, so we may point them to a place in Denton or DeSoto or, right, you know, down in Kaufman. So we've got a larger, expanded list of organizations. I think there's almost 300 in there now. And you can sort it by all kinds of different ways. So if you needed just one particular type of resource today, like shelter, mm-hmm, or let's say you're in Garland and Rowlett right now after the tornadoes and you needed a food pantry. Well, anywhere you are, you pick up your phone and say, show me the closest food pantry, and boom, it's going to pull you up a list closest to where you are.
That's excellent, man. That's great to have, man. This is a vital resource. How long has it been running in now?
So we launched the iPhone app in, I think, July of last year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we did a few years of research on this. If you look at other apps or other cities, some of them are just a list of PDF documents, you know, that don't get updated very regularly. So there's no interaction with them. There's one in New York that's really more of a shaming app. It's just more of just take pictures of homeless guys so we can see how many homeless guys live in this block, but not really designed to interact with those guys or help those guys. So when someone reports a location to us, our team goes. And we've got a lot of people all over the county that have used it. We really made it for Dallas. But then we started having these weird things happen where, like, people reporting homeless individuals camping out in Boston and in LA, and wow, and people are using the app trying to look for the closest domestic violence center in Kansas. And so now we're trying to work on raising funds to make the app more universal. Mm-hmm. So from a technology side, we're trying to tie into Google's API for some of the data that we don't have that's in the area. So I know I can go to Google and search for the closest domestic violence center in Kansas. So we want the app to be able to pull that data up based on your current location.
Wow.
I just left the office and looked at some data on this because I knew we were going to talk about it. So if I went today to look for domestic violence centers in the area, and let's say it pulled up a dozen, mm-hmm, that number would be 12, right? If you looked up food pantries, it might pull up 50. Well, now we're at 62 resources that have been provided by the app. Well, since it's been released, the app has provided over 100,000 referrals.
Wow.
Which is really cool. And so we want to increase the usability of the app. We want to make it available to people with any kind of phone. So iPhone, I and Android now. It works on tablets now. We're trying to do some things to make it faster and easier for those that are on limited data plans and really expand the scope just outside of Dallas proper and even go beyond that, because we've got a lot of people in the DFW area that are using it. The Dallas Morning News wrote an article about this. It came out, it was on the front page of the paper the day after Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is articles on the Dallas Morning News are syndicated all around the country.
Wow.
And so I immediately got calls from organizations around the country saying, how can we have an app? What would it cost us to do that? And who did it for you? And all these questions. And so if we can make our app universal, were to work in your city, City X, then it answers that. You know, we've got kind of the infrastructure to kind of manage that. And it gives us a unique opportunity to serve not only just the homeless, anybody who's impoverished in, mm-hmm, Dallas now, potentially in the future, anybody that's impoverished anywhere in the country. You know, because, for example, you'll have a mom living in her car with her kids.
Right.
Kids will go to school. She'll drop them off at DISD. At the end of the day, she'll pick them up. They'll sleep in the car at night. And she'll pull up into our parking lot at our facility and get out to get some food to feed her kids at night. But when she gets out of her car, she's carrying her little Android phone. Mm-hmm. So now we're putting that information in her hand. So she can say, where can I get food for my kids? Where can I get to safety tonight? And so we're putting the answers that people are, you know, providing the answers for the questions they're having right in their hands.
Yeah, it's really, really strategic.
Well, first, I just kudos to you guys for using technology in such a sort of common sense way, but it's still sort of earth shattering at the same time, right? I mean, this is a big deal, but it's also like, yes, let's use technology. And I know you have technology background, but one of my favorite things about the app is that it really empowers the people who are on the outside of these issues, right? Who might just see it happening and might be more inclined to complain about it or have a negative opinion about it.
Yeah.
And instead of just saying that's acceptable, it's like, here, you can empower yourself to do something about it and help those people who need the help and be able to give them a no, but, you know, like,
yeah,
no, I cannot offer anything to you, or no, I don't have money for you, but Here are several resources. But I have a question for Wayne, and that is, in building the app, and I don't know how in the weeds of it you were in terms of really, you know, compiling some of those resources and seeing what's current, but was there ever a point where you became frustrated that there was just a shortage of resources? That there's, you know, that there's situations where there's really nothing for that particular situation.
Yeah, there's some folks that have very unique situations that it's hard to find a placement for them. So, I mean, I know them by heart because I see these people all the time. You know, if you have a pregnant woman who's got a serious mental health issue, who's not taking her meds, who happens to be an addict, that's a recipe for disaster there. If you have a dad who has a criminal background and he's with his children and he's homeless on the street, a dad with kids with a bad background, where do you send them? And so sometimes it's very challenging to find the best resources. And are there any resources? One of the things we started recognizing when we started collecting this data is there are many organizations that exist as islands. They don't recognize that there are other people that may be doing the same thing in different locations, and how collaboration can make them stronger.
Right.
And so some of the organizations were very resistant when we started to collect their data. We actually asked for their help, and many of them said no. And so we just did it and put it out there. And now that we've done it, it's easier to ask, I guess, forgiveness than permission. Now that we've done it and put the data out there, now they're asking us, hey, can you update this program listing on your website? Or now our number has changed, or our hours have changed. You know, there are some folks that are hard to find support for, but the more we can draw people to collaborate and function together as a healthy community, I think the more we as a team. So if today a guy came to us with a situation that we couldn't help, the goal for us is not to try to reinvent the wheel to help that guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's how do we connect with all these other organizations that may have better solutions than we could ever come up with. We don't want to be all things to all people. In fact, we want to continually narrow our focus. I talked to an organization earlier this year that wanted to invent something that had never been done before. You know, they wanted to create a housing situation for pregnant women. And they were telling me about it. And I said, well, there's 8 more of those already in Dallas. You know, someone said they were going to invent a homeless church last year. And I'm like, there's 12 of those in Dallas. You're not inventing much here. And let's find the other organizations that are already doing this and doing it really well and partner with them. And maybe you do need to create another one. There's always room on the table for more services.
Right.
But we also need to figure out how to learn from each other. What has worked well? What hasn't worked well? You know, so when the app opens on your phone, you can click up food, right? Meals. Where can I eat today? Well, there's no place in town that offers 3 meals a day every day for the homeless in Dallas. There's no one place that does that. There's no one place that serves food every single day. There's just not in Dallas at the present time. And so collaboration and encouraging people to go to organization X when you're organization Y to have a need met that you can't helps them, and it helps you. You don't have to adopt that program in your system and figure out how to budget it and run it.
Right. We were talking about compassion fatigue earlier, man, and that's a sure way to get to it. I mean, trying to do everything. I can't imagine having a ferry all over the town. You know, at one point in time, that's what I did. I kind of grabbed a homeless guy who was newly homeless, brought him to OC, brought him to this store and to that store. I can't imagine doing that now, not without a car, and definitely not in the shape I'm in right now. And so I can't do everything. I understand that. And it bothers me because I'm not Superman. It bothers me.
But you're wearing a Superman shirt.
But it does bother me. I do find it wise to have strong allies, wise counsel. Wise man attains to wise counsel, right? And so to be able to have somebody within arm's reach that can provide resources is very smart. It's very wise. It's the smartest thing a person could do. I can't do everything. I wish I could. I mean, I'm not even an organization, but I do get calls. You know, I get a calls like, yo, man, I need a tent, or, you know, I'm stuck, or, you know, man, I'm hungry. Where you at? I'm getting random texts and random calls, and I'm going to myself. I'm like, not that I say to myself, oh, I wish they would leave me alone. It's more like, I wish I could help them, but the situation I'm in right now, it makes me feel flustered, you know? So, you know, dealing with compassion fatigue and then having good allies like you guys around has always been, it's been very, very great. You know what I mean? I mean, I always, I don't know, last time we were all together, I just try to make it a point to let you guys know how much I appreciated you guys, because it's important to me that, you know, even though I might not do the best for me, you'll do the best for me. And I might have my mind and my interests have always been to project love. It's not necessarily to accept it, but to project it. And I've always tried to project it. And then, you know, to have somebody to project it upon me, it's comforting. It really is. And I appreciate it. That's the point of fellowship and communion and brotherhood. So I just wanted to thank you. Before we go, I wanted to just kind of ask a question. How's everybody? How are they doing? Like, I know you got the kid. 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 Yeah, I ain't got no kid. Yeah, I got no kids, man. But I've been feeling really, really lonely lately, man. I've been really just down in the dumps, man. And so I kind of want to know, how's that part of life going?
Well, hold on. Let me just, okay. You just said that you're all about projecting the love and you're not about accepting the love. And then you talk about being lonely and you talk about needing hugs. and so I feel like you have so much love around you, Rashad. And now because of how much you project that love and how much you sort of surround yourself around people who share that sentiment with you, that if you would accept that love, then maybe you wouldn't feel so lonely. Maybe you would feel those hugs that people were sending you virtually through Facebook. You could feel those every day and not feel without.
I don't feel like the normal me. Me and you talked about this a few weeks back where it was like, yo, I need to be out helping somebody. I need to be out projecting this love. And then I just don't feel like the normal me because I don't see individuals on an everyday basis. Like, cats don't know. I'm really hiding. Like, I'm in my room, hiding away from the world. And I wish I was out there just really doing something productive and positive. And I'm really, in a sense, right now, I want to help somebody, but it doesn't seem like anybody needs my help.
I mean, like, what can you offer? We can put you to work.
I mean, do you want me to lift this table? I mean, what do you...
You said earlier, I've been spending too much time in my room playing video games.
True.
I think if you put the console down and walk out and open your eyes, you're going to find people that desperately need you. And you are serving people by what you're doing here. And there's a whole army of people that you've served before. This is the depressing time of the year to recognize that, to embrace the love, as Jasmine said, for other people are offering you, and to get out and find something to do. Even if it's setting up chairs for an event here at the library, they need people and you need them. It's this, you know, cohesive relationship. I think there's a lot of people that need what you have to offer.
So I've been meaning to tell you, Rashad, that that I'm really proud of you. And you get up every day, man, and you do it. You work. You send me your work schedule. You're going to be in classes again in this semester, right?
True.
I know people with a lot more than what you have who do a lot less every day. And maybe it's that people like me don't tell you that enough.
I mean, I feel appreciated from you guys. That's why I asked how you guys were doing.
But you always ask about everybody else.
Yeah, but I'm...
And you care so much about everyone else. And I think it's important to let everyone else care about you and share that with you and show that to you and accept it.
I'm grateful for it. And I'm grateful for the opportunity you guys have continued to give me here at the library as being the podcast host. It's been a journey. It's been a wonderful journey. And I'm grateful for the opportunity, you know, to sit down and discuss music with you and life, you know, and also to see you be convicted and also just being, you know, humble. And I'm sorry I bug you so much, but I just wanted to say that to you guys, because I really feel like, you know, the best is yet to come for me, and I want more. I want to give more and be more than what I have been for the last couple of weeks. So with that said, y'all mind if I pray and get out of here? Father God, deep down in my heart and my mind and my soul, I'm searching for you. I'm searching for your light and your wisdom. I'm searching for your peace and your joy, your goodness and your mercy, God. You're a good God, and you've provided me with these things. You've given me, you know, more than I could ever imagine to have. I'm grateful. But what I have, God, it may not be material, and it may not even be visible, but I have it to offer. And so I offer it here now. I offer it on every podcast. I offer it in every place where man exists. I offer the love that you have shown to me back to man, or back to you, God, and reaping and sowing, you know, a full harvest of love and joy and peace and faithfulness, God. I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful for the folks who surround me, for the family and the friends, God. And I appreciate it. And I think, just to be brief, God, we all say thank you. We say thank you for life. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Street View. You can visit us online at streetviewpodcast.com. Tune us in again next time for more discussion.